You thought you'd gotten rid of us, didn't you? But you were wrong, old bean, because we're back with a vengeance.
God save the Queen, my son.
From studios in Hollywood, California, rural southern Indiana, and the hinterlands of North Dakota, this is the Live, Laugh, Golf Podcast. And now, here are your hosts, Desert Duffer, OTB Lefty, and Jay Score.
Folks, welcome back. Welcome back to a new world order, post-perestroika golf world that we've entered into. I'm sure all of you have heard the big news. I don't know how much more there is to say about it. The facts are these. LLG is going to be merging commercial operations with No Laying Up. And I want to first talk to the person who brokered this deal. The guy came into my office one day and he said, "Hey, Duffer, why don't we just find out what Solly wants?" Jay Score, how you been, buddy?
I've been doing really good, Duff. It's good to be back. I have been busy on an immense victory tour, working on celebrating, right about this whole thing.
Yeah, you did it. You got it done. They said it could never happen. They said this was going to be a long, drawn-out war, a war of attrition, really. And you said, hey, I know how to mend fences. That's really what you're all about, right? So you deserve a victory lap.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much.
And you know, who said, by the way, a lot of people said nothing gets done over Facebook Messenger group chats, but you proved everyone wrong with this, Jay Score. I mean, we're all really proud of what we've done here.
Listen, Duff, we all know when things really need to get done, it happens in small groups from members of various Illuminatis, and deals get made.
Of course, the real news is there's been some sort of working relationship established between the PGA Tour and the private investment fund of the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. I know my buddy OTP Lefty has a lot of feelings about that, a lot of feels, a lot of thoughts. Do you feel vindicated, OTP?
Yes, I do, in one small way, because while everyone was just charging to each side and to talk about how evil the potential of Saudi money in golf was, or, you know, how desperate they were for something new, I said what all bankers say all the time: let's wait and see. And we didn't have to wait very long, and we saw. Now we see.
And now we wait. We're going to continue to wait and see. There is a lot of
yes, of course.
I think in the words of the immortal, the one of the great minds of our time, of our generation, Maverick McNeely, we don't know anything yet. I love, you know, there's always, just more joy comes out of this every day. And a big piece of the joy for me was just the establishment of Mav McNeely as the intellectual force on the PGA Tour. Like, I just can't believe how smart that Mav McNeely is. We need more guys like him. Today it came out, I guess today, we're recording this on Wednesday evening, that Kyle, his name Kyle Westmoreland, some guy who's like a millionth in the world, who's missed like 9 out of his last 10 cuts, apparently, who was in the Air Force for a while. He apparently stood up at the players meeting and told Jay that, you know, as a veteran, this is some BS. Apparently the Air Force is very, very anti-Saudi Arabia. Who knew? But thanks, Kyle. So we've got the veteran's viewpoint on that, I guess. As much work as we do, I've heard on other podcasts that apparently Saudi Arabia has been our greatest ally in the war on terror. But according to Kyle, man, we shouldn't be doing business with those guys. So we've got at least one veteran's viewpoint. We've got one scion of a maybe 100 millionaire family in Mav McNeely. We've got his viewpoint, or at least several hundred words of nothing from Mav. Just really getting some. What about Rory? I mean, OTP, you know, that's your guy. What's his response been? How have you responded to his response? What have we learned from Rory over these past few days?
Well, he kind of got his wish. If you'll go back to the end of last summer, he started to say something to the effect of, "Hey, I don't see anything wrong with Saudi money. We just have to figure out a way to incorporate it into the existing framework. I don't want to do anything different or new. I'd just like to collect all of this money, if you don't mind."
Also, to be clear, he hates Liv. I hate Liv. I hate it. Why does he hate Liv so much? And he hates, I mean, he's filled with hatred against, I don't know, is it shorts? Is it the shotgun start? Does he hate the music? Well, like, why is he okay with Yasser and MBS's money? But man, don't he hates Liv something fierce.
I still cannot figure that out for people that have been so passionate against every single thing that it changes from the tour. They hate the tour, but they also hate everything about the thing that's different from the tour.
Yeah. And we thought that it was that this tour was headed by a sovereign nation that had been behind a variety of human rights abuses and apparently assassinated a U.S.-based journalist. A lot of times you hear this Khashoggi guy was a U.S. citizen. He was not, in fact. U.S. citizen journalists have been killed by Middle Eastern nations. It's usually Israel. Apparently, for some reason, Jamal Khashoggi is a hero to all in the Gulf world, and that was the reason. But now that's not the reason anymore. Or maybe it is the reason, as long as that country doesn't control Gulf. Can we talk about that a little bit? J-Score, what does it mean to control Gulf? The PGA Tour won because now they still get to control Gulf. Is that a W?
I guess. We've loyal listeners of the show will know that I personally try very hard to separate pro golf from golf, and that pro golf is an absolute circus and an entertainment product and nothing more. So I guess if your goal is to control pro golf, you know, good for you. It also, to me, just still reeks of monopolistic tendencies. And I'm not sure we've really moved anywhere on that, I guess. So are you celebrating? Are we celebrating? Are they celebrating that they have come out on top? And I still don't understand what that really even means, because pro golf itself is big, deep, broad, broader than ever, deeper than ever. And I don't know, controlling a very mid product to me doesn't seem like that much of a W.
Yeah, so we should talk about what the control is over, really, and what has been announced and what has been leaked and what has been explained over the course of the last week has changed on an almost daily basis. When the deal was announced by Jay Monahan and Yasser Al-Rumayyan on CNBC, it was the companies were merging commercial operations. Yasser would be the chairman of the board of directors on which Jay would sit, along with Jimmy Dunn and Ed Herlihy. Jay would be the CEO of the PGA Tour, which was going to continue to exist alongside LIV and alongside the DP World Tour under the umbrella of what sounded like a parent by the name, a temporary name from what we understood, of NewCo. Now, either yesterday or today, there was a letter leaked from Jay Monahan to a U.S. congressperson. The congressperson's name was redacted. And one of the things that stuck out to me in that letter was that Jay said that the new company would be a subsidiary of the PGA Tour. So, in fact, the PGA Tour is going to be above the new company, which I guess will hold the commercial investments of the various, the PIF and the DP World Tour and the PGA Tour. I'm not certain how that would work. I don't understand how the PGA Tour plans to keep its 501c6 designation from the IRS, but then also create a for-profit, which would be owned by the PGA Tour. That makes no sense. So when we say we don't know what's happening, I mean, in so many ways, we don't know, and maybe they don't know either. Somewhere along the line over the past few days, I guess it was Jimmy Dunn explained that current PGA Tour players would hold equity in the new company. And some people on Twitter, some of our learned golf journalists, expressed either disbelief at that or shock at that. And my question was, what did you think was going to happen? What did they think this deal was? So the PGA Tour, Jay Monahan came out on TV and said, hey, we're going to take all of our assets. PIF is going to take all of its golf assets. DP World Tour will do the same. We'll throw it in a pool. We'll get a valuation. And that's how we'll come up with equity. Well, that makes sense, right? We know from their 990 filings that the PGA Tour, at least in its last filing, which was at the end of 2021, had somewhere around $1.5 billion worth of net assets. That's real estate. That's the TPC courses. That's, you know, the castle in Pontevedra, right? That's all of its assets. That's real money. and that was going to go into the pool, and that's, let's say, that's $1.5 billion. And then we've got goodwill and whatever, and presumably PIF didn't have much in the way of hard assets, so they would match that, I would think, in cash dollars. And then you've got equity, so PIF would, in that case, have 50%, and the PGA Tour would have 50%. Where did these guys, where did the, I don't even know these guys' names, and I'm not going to put them out there, but where did they think that equity was going to go? What did they think the PGA Tour was going to expect in return for the $1.5 billion that it was putting into the pool? Who was going to own that? These guys, they don't even ask the questions. It just blows my mind. Like, this is their job. Do we really believe the PGA Tour players are going to have equity? Who do you think? You think Jimmy Dunn was just saying, "Oh, I will be half owner of this company. I just assumed $1.5 billion from this 501c6. I hope that's cool with everybody." I mean, who's running the show here? Anyone in golf journalism? I mean, these guys are supposed to be journalists. Some of them are wildly connected. They know they've got Justin Thomas in their Rolodex, right? Isn't there someone that they can call to ask, like, well, what does this mean to you? Someone in the business world of golf? Or is it just, I don't know, I heard this other guy on a podcast, and I guess he's a lawyer. He was studying for the bar a year ago at this time, but let's get him on the most important day in golf history to give his opinion on the legal aspects here. What is going on?
Yeah, does anybody have any idea if they can pay out any of those net assets to their members? There would have to be some kind of distribution based on some kind of hierarchy.
I think one of the most interesting and important things about this is I've heard some people saying, well, how could you say Phil was right when it turns out the PGA was worried, PGA Tour was worried about being able to pay its legal bills? Clearly, he was not right. They were running out of money. Well, they have $1.5 billion. What they didn't want to do was sell assets to pay those legal bills. And to me, this is exactly what Phil was talking about the entire time. This organization is a 501c6 organization. It was supposed to be a trade association, a business group. So these have existed in other sports. A lot of times they've ended. The NFL used to be one of these. And what happens is the organization takes in money and it pays it out to its members on a yearly basis. So when the NFL gave up its 501c6 status, it was no big deal, because it didn't have any substantial assets to turn over. What Phil was always upset about was that the PGA Tour was treating it not like a 501c6 trade association, but something like a university, like it was building an endowment for the future, for future generations of professional golfers. Well, that's not how it's supposed to work. So Jay Monahan could say, well, we're investing this wisely, and we've turned what used to be only $200 million in net assets to $1.5 billion. Phil's saying, I don't care. I did that. That's my money. That's not the money of whoever's on the PGA Tour 200 years from now when the PGA Tour decides to give up the 501c6 status and pay it out. He wanted that money to be paid out, if not on a yearly basis, but, you know, every 5 years or 10 years or whatever.
And the other part is that they built themselves a $170 million palace beside their golf course that never has a budget for how they're going to put it together. There's a bureaucracy down there that continues to siphon money off of the player's effort. And distributing money from two golf tournaments a year probably doesn't require the number of employees and the number of vice presidents that the PGA Tour undoubtedly has.
Exactly.
And I'm sure, and that's where the rub is. Like, the operating costs, the overhead are just too high. Once you started to read through the paperwork and see that the PGA Tour actually doesn't own golf tournaments other than just a couple, they're just bringing the talent. They're bringing the media rights and stuff to the Greater Hartford Open or whatever you like. That was surprising to me, you know, a year and a half ago when all of this first started going on. But the bureaucracy fighting against the players' interest, the existing players' interest, is really an undertold story in this whole saga.
Yeah, and I think that's exactly right. And I think that's exactly what Phil has been talking about all these years. And he's been proven right. And this is finally those chickens coming home to roost. And Phil knew that it was going to happen eventually, with his career winding down, obviously. It was clear to him that he was not going to be a part of that. And so he cashed, I mean, brilliantly, he cashed out before it happened. So now it happens, you know, maybe he moved it along. That's a good thing. I think the way this has turned out is total vindication. Now, all of this, remember, we're talking about what may happen. There are going to be so many government hurdles. You've heard quite a bit in the media about antitrust investigations and the hurdles that they're going to face in getting this merger accepted by either the FTC or more likely the DOJ. That's certainly going to be a hurdle, but there are also going to be hurdles in the way of tax treatment and the IRS. The PGA Tour is not, I mean, obviously they have very talented, very highly paid lawyers on this, but it's not going to be as simple as saying, oh, we're not a 501c6 anymore. We're going to take this money and move it somewhere else. First of all, you know, I don't know how much in the way of taxes their separate commercial interests have been paying over the course of years, but I doubt that it's the full amount. So when these get moved, if they get moved to another entity that is no longer being treated as a 501c6, I expect, you know, at least regular taxation and then potentially some penalties. They'll have to submit this to the IRS. They'll get a determination letter from the IRS. This is going to be a serious process for them to undergo. And then, of course, there is the issue of antitrust scrutiny. And that's going to be a big deal. And you've heard some people come out and say, well, this deal's never gone through. And some people saying, well, this is definitely going through. Well, neither of those is true, of course. It's not going to go through in the way that Jay probably spelled it out on CNBC. It's not going to be as simple as we're taking a competitor off the board and we're consolidating power. That's the problem, okay? And, oh, and, you know, the way Jimmy Dunn has spelled it out, and then we're going to penalize the guys who left. None of that's going to happen, okay? But there's a good chance that it's going to be it's going to be the DOJ that investigates, because the DOJ has already been investigating the PGA Tour over the course of the past couple of years. So they're going to take the lead on this. And there's an act, okay, that requires for most mergers of a certain size, a bunch of disclosures to be made. From what I understand, the PGA Tour and the PIF are claiming that they don't need to do these pre-merger disclosures. I doubt that. They're going to have to submit the deal to the DOJ. And the DOJ is going to say, okay, we're going to think about it. Well, three things you need to remember. These are almost certainly you're going to hear from legal analysts in the coming weeks. Consent decree. A consent decree is essentially a super settlement. It's a settlement that gets entered in court and approved by a judge, and it gets overseen by a judge. It is, you know, normally if you enter into a settlement agreement with somebody, settle a lawsuit, and then down the road, the other party doesn't do what they were supposed to do, well, a lot of times you're going to have to go and sue them again for breach of contract. The consent decree, the court is always there, okay? If there's a breach, you go directly to the court. And the government has a lot of powers when it comes to consent decrees. It can include a lot of different things in there. So there will be conditions to any deal that does get approved by the DOJ. They can do things like saying, well, we need to have somebody in there. We need to have an antitrust monitor involved at NewCo to make sure that the antitrust laws are being followed, the Sherman Act's being followed. Conditions that typically go along with a merger being approved of this type, which is a merger to monopoly, are divestiture. So the government will require that this new company sell or divest some of its assets in a certain market or overall. So a lot of times it could be like, you know, if it's a communications merger, you've got to sell your newspapers in New York, or you got to sell a bunch of TV stations, something like that. Here, it's going to be difficult, right? The PGA Tour, as you already mentioned, OTP, doesn't really own these tournaments. It can't sell off its golf tournaments. And it doesn't even really have contracts with its players. It can't sell those off either. The DP World Tour is in kind of a similar position. You know, who knows to what extent they really matter in this deal, but they're there anyway. But then you have LIV, which actually does have assets. It has assets in the way of contracts with some of the best players in the world. I could see a scenario where the government says, okay, we'll let this merger go through. There are going to be a couple of conditions. Those will include you've got to divest LIV's Golf Holdings, or you've got to divest Liv from Piff's Golf Holdings. So essentially, you're putting Liv up for sale. So we've got a golf tour that has already paid out its signing bonuses to some of the best players in the world. It's got these players under contract. And also, the government says one of the conditions is that whole conflicting events clause and waiver thing, you can't do that anymore. So now imagine a condition where you've got Liv up for sale, but PGA Tour players are free to come in and join Liv because they can go back and play PGA Tour, and the new company doesn't have Saudi money in it. Sounds like, I don't know if I'm Nike or Titleist or whomever has money, I could be interested in buying Liv. Liv sounds like the better deal in this new golf world.
Yeah, I'd be very interested if I was Nike or another American company or a company that's strongly identified with America. And if only there was someone who hasn't spoken a word about this merger in the media yet. Who could you have as your star player and your television icon in honor of my veteran father, my proud Army Green Beret father?
Absolutely.
Who could be the main man? And what a thing for Tiger to take from Phil all at the same time.
Well, he'd be with Phil. I mean, it would be Liv. He'd be playing alongside Phil. And listen, all of the best players in the world would play there. We know there's interest in, we've got this British banker guy, Andy Gardner, out there he's just, you know, screaming at clouds about how his idea was stolen by the Saudis. You know, he's got all of this private equity money that was interested in doing something exactly like this. Well, now it's up for sale. And the government says, it's consent decree, divestiture, and the third is a hold separate agreement. So what they commonly impose in these consent decrees is a requirement that until that sale goes through, this company, so in this case, Liv, has to be managed separately from the new company. So they got to put somebody in there, got to keep paying the players, got to keep running those tournaments. And so Jay's idea of like, I'm going to take a hard look at this team golf and see if it's some, this is, I can tell you, if I have one guarantee, I don't know whether the deal's going to go through, whether it's going to blow up. But what I promise you is that the deal is not going to go through with the conflicting events clause remaining in place and the players who went to Liv getting fined. That's just not in a million years going to happen. And the idea that the deal is going to go through and they're going to shut down Liv and put the very reason that the DOJ has been investigating them for 2 years, they're not going to keep doing that. Oh yeah. And also further consolidate our monopoly. Like this is so pie in the sky. I just can't express how insane or how blinded by your PGA Tour loyalty you have to be to believe that this is happening. Cause it's not, it's that, that is never happening.
And I want to just get off my chest and let everyone hear is throughout the past week, there has been a lot of talk about what Jay Monahan might do and a lot of mind reading about what Yasser might be thinking or what Yasser might do or what he would allow. He's only the chairman of the biggest company in the world in an environment that I would imagine would be fairly competitive for such a job. I feel like he's above average in intelligence, ambition, ruthlessness, and just savvy, just being able to work a room. And before he was next to Jay Monahan, everybody thought Jay Monahan was a dunce. And now they're trying to say, oh, well, Jay will be able to do things that this Yasser might think. These people are not in the same league. This is like,
absolutely.
This is like, as someone said to me last week, and I thought it was a great comparison. It's like the difference between the 85 Bears and your local high school JV team in football. Is the difference here?
Why does it have to be about the 85 Bears? Why have to do that?
I think we know why, Duff.
And that's absolutely right. But I want to be careful. We're not allowed to speak too harshly about Jay Monahan right now because he's experienced, apparently, according to the release, he's having some sort of medical condition, and Jay's in trouble. So.
Get well soon.
You know, prayers up to Jay Monahan. But sure. Also, it's probably. It's probably bullshit. That's, you know, he's hiding out, and
It's just too perfect.
I hope he's in rehab. I hope he's just getting treatment for sex addiction.
The conspiracy theories are running amok. It's so perfect. Like, every angle. I mean, the tinfoil hats are out, and we've got everything from he's faking it so he doesn't have to face the media and the questions. We've got, you know, there's the, did a bone saw come into play? Is it, you know,
yeah, those jokes never get old. That's good stuff.
It's incredible. It's too perfect. And how can you not be more entertained by pro golf than right now? It's peaking, truly.
All right. Well, so what else do we have on this merger? I know there are so many thoughts. We've gone through so many of them on the Facebook Messenger chat that we're so active on.
First, I need to go back. I'm a little insulted that you think I have a Facebook. It's quite disappointing.
Cast of characters is something else. Like, everybody involved, like who's the biggest putts? Like, out of all of them, like, Phil was proven right, but like, is Jay a bigger putz, or is Jimmy Dunn a bigger putz? Are they together? Are they the putz brothers? Like,
so let's talk about that. Go ahead, Jay Score.
Well, I was just going to say, I don't think they're putzes. I mean, honestly, Jay's doing what Jay should be doing. I mean, it's like, you know, Roger Goodell gets beaten up, but the owners love him. You know, Jay's getting beaten up, but the Golf Illuminati loves him. So I think.
Yeah, but does anybody love Jay? And should Jay probably should have resigned by now? I mean, I guess at this point, he's just trying to get himself. And this is what I've speculated, is that part of this deal was he had to know the kind of fire that he was going to take. Okay. It's complete reversal. He had to know. That's why it's like, okay, I'm going to need to be named CEO of, you know, this one and that one, and I need to be on the board. And also, here's the buyout clause. When you fire me, this is what I get. Because he knows he's getting fired. There's no way he survives this. Anybody who's been paying attention knew it was coming as soon as he was on CNBC. I mean, you just can't do that. The things that he said about 9/11, the things that he said about having to apologize for being a member of the PGA Tour, the things that he did, and we know he was involved with the families of 9/11, all of it inexcusable. None of it worked to the players' advantage and put so many of them in just a really bad position, especially those of them who it's their own fault too. And I'm looking directly at Rory McIlroy, who decided to ride for this guy at every opportunity, but he made Rory look really bad. And Rory doesn't need much help making himself look bad. So there's no way this guy survives. They don't need him. What is he bringing to the table at this point but luggage?
Yeah, there's something has to come through there with a big blade and just eliminate some layers so that there is some more for the players to get. I mean, you're right, Jesse. Jay did do what was best for Jay. And he also did something that was good for the tour so far, which is he didn't just fight with pure stubbornness until there was no money left. And he may well have gotten some agreement that keeps things going. So to that extent, you know, not too bad. But on the public relations side.
Oh, it's a disaster.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, I mean.
Not great.
And some of the things that I think I've heard people say, well, he couldn't have seen this coming. And back in 2019, and well, you know, during COVID, it was. Remember that he had the opportunity in 2021. In 2021, I think it was in April, there was a meeting with several of the members of PIF, along with Keith Pelly. The little Irish dwarf Paul McGinley was in this meeting for whatever reason. And the representatives of PIF outlined kind of what they wanted to do with LIV, but also just that they wanted to get involved in golf and they wanted to inject massive amounts of cash into golf. And the DP World Tour and Keith Pelly said, oh, we're very interested. This sounds very interesting. However, we need to make sure that the big guys basically are on board for this, the big guys being the PGA Tour. And it was the PGA Tour that not only didn't accept those terms, didn't want to get involved, didn't want to take that massive cash infusion with no strings attached, no litigation filed. Not only did they turn that down, they never even took the phone call. Jay didn't even want to hear any of the ideas. just immediately went on a campaign with his board of directors and with his players and said, here's what we're going to do instead. We're going to impose more rules on players. We're going to threaten our own players. We're going to tell everybody, you mess with another tour, private equity golf or Saudi golf or anybody but us, and we will put the hammer down. And that's what they did. And that's why the litigation happened. And everyone, and now there's all this kind of retconning of the litigation. Oh, the PGA Tour was winning so many, was so winning. It's like Donald Trump, we were winning, 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 bigly, bigly, bigly. Discovery skirmishes. People are, I hear that well, the PGA Tour was going to have to submit to discovery, and this was going to be precedent. And you have no idea what you're talking about. There was a magistrate judge who issued a discovery ruling against it. One federal district court judge agreed with it, but also said, yeah, this is such a close call that I don't know how it's going to shake out at the Ninth Circuit and certainly not at the Supreme Court. So what I'm going to do, even though I agreed with the PGA Tour here, is I'm going to stay discovery, and I'm not going to let the PGA Tour have any discovery into the PIF or into Yasir Al-Rumayyan until the appeals are settled. That was a huge loss for the PGA Tour. So all these armchair Holiday Inn Express legal experts who think that the PGA Tour was winning bigly in the legal wars are just way, way, way off base. The PGA Tour, to some extent, did win in that they had one plan for litigation, because they had, as I've been telling you all along, by far the worst of it in this antitrust case. The DOJ wasn't investigating for nothing. They had the worst of it in the reality of the case, so they filed this nonsensical counterclaim about interference with contracts. And their only plan was to delay, to stonewall. And the idea at the outset was, this live thing stinks so badly that if we drag this out a year or two, it's going to go under and this whole thing's going to go away and it's going to be moot. And so it wasn't so much, oh, the legal bills are mounting. They knew that they couldn't afford to pay legal bills indefinitely, paying Kecker and Van Ness and Skadden Arps. They knew they didn't have that kind of money. The problem was Australia, Adelaide. The problem was people going to live events. The problem was Brooks Koepka winning a major championship. That's when they said, oh shit, this is not going away. This Al-Rumayyan guy, Jimmy Dunn, called up or WhatsApped Al-Rumayyan and clearly learned that, like, well, we're in this for the long haul. I think one of the interesting things that came out this week that hasn't been discussed a lot is that there's a report that in that first meeting or the second meeting, I don't know, they're flying all over. They're in Venice. They're having probably amazing meals in Italy. Was that Al-Rumayyan said that he would drop the lawsuit even if they didn't do this deal. I think that's possibly true, that he said, hey, I'll drop the lawsuit without doing a deal, without merging. I don't think it just meant I'm going to drop it because I think you're really handsome, Jimmy Dunn, and you've won me over personally, so I'm going to eat it. No, I think he probably was offering what I said they would offer all along, which is, hey, let's coexist, man. We'll drop the lawsuit if you get rid of these fines to these players. You know, let guys play. Let's work together. We're happy to, like, you know, we're not going to have our tournaments run against your big tournaments. There is a way to work this out. And Jimmy Dunn said, thank you. I appreciate that. I think we really are finding some common ground. How about also you give us a few billion dollars and we just say we're partners? That's what really happened. And Jimmy said, oh yeah, by the way, I have this other company. I don't know if you're doing any other business, but I'd love to talk sometime. That's what everyone's like, you know, Jimmy Dunn's getting paid. Well, he's not getting paid really for this PGA Tour thing. He's not taking equity in Nuco. But yeah, I imagine that his company would be doing some business with the PIF in the future.
For sure. I'm glad you guys, we got the financial angle here. We got the legal angle here. Me as a layman, I'm just like, how does the Tour have any equity? And I'm glad you guys broke it down, because the product's losing tournament sponsors left and right. The viewership is down. COVID is over. Tiger's done. What's there to gain here? Am I supposed to be hyped about tomorrow's sports Tiger Sim Golf League and DJ Khaled?
Maybe, but they have net assets because they've accumulated their revenues over expenses over time. they're not for profit. They're just tax exempt, right? So that's basically what's happened. They've invested that extra money into other vehicles like TPC golf courses, and we love those.
Invested that extra money in some places that's called embezzlement, but you know they. Didn't they make a movie about that where you did like the guys took like little half a pennies and added them all up? And
we're all gentlemen.
That's basically
here,
so what Jay Monahan did.
We're investing so that we get to hire more of our friends to be the third assistant deputy vice president of imaginary media relations, which is the job that I've been angling for with the tour for some time. Imaginary work is my favorite, especially if I'm grossly overpaid.
Yeah, but
that's basically it. The tour was only throwing off between $20 and $50 million a year, best people can figure, and they had a $52 million legal bill for 1 year, so yeah. they weren't going to make it.
Cash wise, you know, they invested wisely and they got lucky with some real estate, and you know, as many of the rich found themselves getting richer. During COVID, that happened for the PGA Tour as well. Assets, again, treated the tour as though it were a university for the public good for generations down the road instead of a business and trade association that existed for the benefit of its members. And that was the problem. And then that's going to change, I guess. What's going to be interesting if this – another thing that's going to be interesting if this deal goes through is kind of what the structure – of that equity will be in the new company. So will it be like a law partnership where you buy in and you get payouts while you're a partner and then you buy out? Or will it be the kind of thing where the lucky players who happen to be there? So that's similar also to like an equity golf membership where you own one share in the country club. And you know, if you sell the course, you get your portion then. Or will it be the kind of thing where the lucky players who happen to be members at the time the ownership structure changed have that equity in the new company forever and ever? I doubt it'll be that way. I imagine they will at least try to set it up so that as new members come in, they get shares. But that'll be interesting to see and watch, and that'll be something the government will have its say in too.
Yeah, hopefully some of those esteemed guys off the Champions Tour we love so much, like my homie Fred Couples, will come back and go, wait a minute, I want a piece of this too, because I was part of this effort that built these net assets to begin with.
Yeah, I would love to see that. I would love to see that hypocrisy just rear its ugly head.
Me too. Me and the other really, really big Fred Couples fans from Gen X can't wait to see it.
Speaking of hypocrisy and hypocrites, we're about done talking about this merger, I think, for the time being, but we have not mentioned, I don't think, either Brandel or Amon Lynch, who, you know, it's been a tough week for them. Do you have any response? How do you think they've handled it? Are they being, you know, you can talk about any other media members that you think maybe have accepted the reality or bargained, denied. What do you think about Amon, Brandel, Solly et al.?
Brandel, I'll take. He changed his tune very quickly in that first day. Just somebody who thought he had carte blanche to go one way, and now he has to come up with artful ways to be neutral. I think that's what you'll find his word salad will be going forward. Did his best, was never right, but argued vociferously right till the bitter merge. So yeah. That's what I got to say about him.
I take Brandel. I would give Amon a little bit more credit so far than Brandel. I think Brandel has been disgusting in his disgusting and unsurprising, completely unsurprising in his inability to admit that he was wrong. So he came out at least on the first day. I give him credit. He seemed to be saddened, beaten, you know, worn down. Couldn't believe what happened. That the PGA had done what he had believed that his organization could never do, and it had fallen to those evil and moneyed Saudi interests. But it just took, it seemed like a day and a half before he was like, well, yes, the Saudis are bad, but Jay and Jimmy and Ed really did the best they could under the circumstances, which is garbage. It's all garbage, right? Like they could have just dropped the lawsuit. They could have looked for other investors. There are a million other options that existed other than, well, we can't beat them, so let's get totally in bed with them. I mean, there were other ways around this. And they chose not to even explore those. They never discussed it with their players. They didn't even discuss it with the full policy board. I mean, it was, to me, I think that's one of the things that not only do I think Jay has to go, I think that entire policy board, which is the board of directors of the PGA Tour, needs to be disbanded. The bylaws need to be rewritten. Players need to have a majority on that board, and players as a whole need the ability, especially in emergency situations like this, to be able to call a vote of the entire membership when it's something like, oh, hey, guys, by the way, we're going to restructure the organization and we're going to get into bed with the foreign government. The players should have a say. Okay. And I've been beating this drum. This is not new to me. Everyone's suddenly going, oh, this is supposed to be a members organization. I've been saying this for years now. I've been saying it for as long as we've had this podcast, that the players have no power. The media still doesn't understand it. I saw DJ Pi and that Van Valkenburg guy write some explainer to the peons about what was happening in this whole merger. And they're still saying, oh, and then there's the PGA Tour of America. The PGA of America, they're on the board, but they're non-voting. Since when? Who says they don't have a vote? Who says the president of the PGA of America doesn't have a vote? I mean, maybe it's true. I know the bylaws have been amended. They don't publicize them. But the last ones I saw that were involved, that were submitted in discovery in the litigation, dated November of 2017, the PGA member on the board still had a vote. That's still, so we added a player director. So there are five now. There used to be four. There are five independent directors. And then there's the PGA of America. That's still 6-5. The PGA Tour players still represent a minority on that policy. And it's a disgrace. It's a disgrace the way Jimmy Dunn, all of those guys are complicit in allowing this guy to come on board in November or January or whenever he came on board and to sell the tour out from under their feet in a matter of months. The whole board has to go. That includes the players too. Rory, I don't know who else is on there. Charlie Hoffman. They all need to go. Jay Score, any thoughts? Eamon Lynch?
You guys covered Brandel really well. I think in general for me with the PGA Tour loyalists in general, I mean, I get, like, why not just, like, the biggest fault is just having such a narrow view and take from the start where it's like, it's very clear, you know, you're carrying the company torch and that's fine, right? Like, but why not just be more clear about that and honest and genuine about it? And, you know, look, I cash checks, you know, indirectly via the PGA Tour, and it's good for me to see that brand continue to succeed in the market and be done with it, right? Like, I don't see what is so complicated about that. It would certainly, to me, help me view them in a better light if they were to just take a moment and just acknowledge the fact that, like, that's ultimately what it boils down to. And I guess now that the live money will be laundered a little bit further, makes it all okay, I suppose.
You start seeing these articles from Golf Digest or all these ridiculous organizations that are like, where else have you seen Saudi PIF money? And it starts to be like, hey, this is okay, man. Have you ever taken an Uber? where has this been for 2 years? I thought that was whataboutism. And the other thing, I think you're right, and we shouldn't expect that these guys who have podcasts or magazines or television networks are going to be real about who they're standing for and why. I don't expect that. But what I do expect, or what I don't understand, are why the regular folk, the people like you and me, the guys who just watch golf, I don't get the people who continue to fight for this organization, this now it's a 501c6, maybe some of it will continue to be, maybe some of it won't. Why they feel such loyalty to this thing called the PGA Tour, who we've seen is just corrupt and amoral. Why, if you love these players, if you love the game, why wouldn't you be taking this as, you should be outraged at what happened. You should be urging the players to do what they did originally, which is break off and start their own new thing. That doesn't, if you hate Saudi money, then get away from the Saudi money. If you hate Jay Monahan, get away from Jay Monahan. Why are you standing for this thing that is just a corporation? It's just a money-making machine that does nothing but treat you like garbage, does nothing but order you to take down video clips that you post on Twitter, that charges you $17 for a beer when you go to one of their crappy tournaments, that does nothing but run commercials all day when you're trying to watch golf. Why are you riding so hard for this corporation?
I have no idea. This is like the puzzling thing. The people that hate every single thing because it's even slightly different than the thing that they've known their entire lives. They're not afraid of anything but just the slightest bit of change. They just want to lay on their couch and suck their thumb on Sunday afternoons and fall asleep to the dulcet tones of Jim Nance and whatever nitwit they've got in there sitting next to him this year.
Yeah,
I haven't seen the tournament, so I don't know.
I heard the guy on one of these podcasts about television, The Watch. It's a Ringer podcast. And he was mentioning something about that today. It's about the endings of shows and finalities and why people, they always hate them no matter what. It's like his theory is that we just, as a society, it's just a constant fight against death. We hate the end of anything. Nothing must change, must go on forever. Even if it's really bad, I want Friends to just be on forever. Yeah, maybe that's what it is with the PGA. Who could say?
That's as good a take as I've heard.
All right. So listen, we're not that way. We're really, that's it. I'm going to end the discussion of the PIF PGA Tour merger. We're done with that. We're going to go on to the next thing, which I guess is there's a major championship down the street for me this week. I think I can see John Rahm's golden aura from here. The U.S. Open is happening at L.A. Country Club this week. I don't know. What else do we have to say? It's a club. I've never been invited there. I haven't played there yet. I hear good things. Who do you guys like?
All the videos are great. So I've got three people to watch this week. Scheffler, obviously, the ball-hitting dominant number one player in the world, got as low as 6-1 today. Not a great price, but, I mean, you got to have him as a part of something. Patrick Cantlay, Californian, and high finish in the last major. And if you're way down the line, look for a high odds guy, Cam Davis. Just a course fit and a high finish in the last major championship. So those are my three.
Which one was that? Which major championship was that?
Cam Davis, the PGA Championship.
Oh, the PGA Championship. Oh, great.
Yeah. We all missed that. Congratulations
to Brooks Koepka, the PGA champion. And that was his fifth major, I understand. Congratulations.
Yes, all good for him. Should he win this week, he will be among three golfers who have won three PGAs and three United States Opens with these two guys named Jack Nicklaus and Tiger Woods. A pretty elite company. There's a lot of positive stuff has just emerged. Everyone loved Koepka all along, and they were just so heartbroken that he went. But they understood why he did it, because there was the potential of energy and of injury. And he just humanized himself so much. Did you see Full Swing?
Yeah.
Did you watch the Netflix series about the PGA Tour where he questioned his future and sat around his pool? It really made me cheer for him down the end. It really humanized him from someone who used to go and feign that he was so unfeeling and impervious to pressure. It just showed what was truly weighing on him. And it really meant a lot to me personally. It really edified me to see him win his fifth major.
Yeah, and he's he was never really a part of LIV anyway. And who could have been blamed for thinking that he wouldn't be missed and that he was all washed up? Because after all, he even thought so himself. So I think all is forgiven on that front. Everybody loves Brooksy. Of course they did and do. But we still hate Bryson as long as he – so hopefully he doesn't win this week. Right.
I am rooting for Bryson, of course, this week.
Liz, we here don't hate Bryson.
LLG.
I'm talking about PGA Tour Stan / does Eric Anders Lang still have a podcast? If you listen to that guy, you probably hate Bryson.
But they're kind of – the tune has changed a little bit. They're kind of – you know, now that the merger is here, not to go back to that, but there is a little bit of, you know, love-hate now. It's not just hate anymore. It's kind of like, oh,
True. I did see some foreplay content, including Bryson today. So it's a – is it an ironic thing, though? Who could say?
Yeah, it's hard to tell. There's so many layers of irony nowadays that everybody's just lost in the sauce. Some guys that I like – well, I definitely don't like Rory, but we're not going to get into that. I do like Koepka quite a bit. I'm interested to see, you know, maybe I should apologize. I feel like it's been a while since we've been on. I would like to apologize about my takes on Phil Mickelson previously.
Washed up. He said he was washed
completely
up.
Washed. I said he was completely washed. And at this point, I'm rooting for him. I'd love to see him win. But there's something about a seventh, second place that would be incredibly delightful
guy. That's Schadenfreude from J Score that we don't like to see on this podcast, really.
You know, I really like, you know, I don't really like Scheffler, but Scheffler just feels so logical here, right? It's like just scrambling around and getting it done and hitting good iron shots and, you know, Russell Henley, I've got Russell Henley in a couple pools, pretty good recent performances.
Let me ask you a question, Jay Score. Billy Horschel, is he in this tournament this week?
Is he?
Yeah, I believe he is. He's last I checked, he was ranked in the top 50 in the world still. What do you think Billy Horschel, is this course set up well for Billy Ho?
I believe we are looking at a third consecutive cut from the U.S. Open for Mr. Horschel this year.
Yeah,
three. Somebody might have to check. I think this would be his third consecutive year of missing the cut at the U.S. Open.
But yeah, I haven't had my hair cut in a few months, and if Billy Ho makes the cut, I will get a haircut. I expect not to have to do that. That guy stinks. Max Homa is another one we need to talk about. Where is Max going to finish? Apparently, from what I've been told, he is the course record holder at LACC. I don't know whether that's the North or the South course. I don't care. Is Max Homa going to do something this week? See or no?
You know, everything is going the right way. You know, he likes to play in California. It's where he shows up. But, you know, you look at his major history and he wilts away pretty quickly. So,
total choker. 29th place for Max. He'll make the cut, but not a top 25. That guy,
That sounds about right. That sounds about right. An interesting storyline. Definitely somebody I'm going to have the little star on the app to track their progress this week.
Okay. I have very little in the way of predictions other than John Rahm's going to win. He's going to win by probably 6 strokes. That's your winner. 2023 U.S. Open, John Rahm. Shortly thereafter, he'll announce that he's joining LIV. Which will be greeted with, you know, nonchalance, I suppose, from the golf media. We're all part of the same big happy family now.
I mean, will that not do what? Maybe he joins and rattles the Ryder Cup cage and says, "You got to bring Sergio back."
I won't play unless my Fireballs teammate and captain Sergio Garcia is also on the team.
Yes, like that. That's what it's going to be about.
By the way, I wore my Fireballs hat out the other day. It's white. It's a white hat with the fire. It's so clean. I mean, I can see people just their eyes light up when they pass by me when I'm wearing that Fireballs hat. You haven't asked if I plan to go over there to LACC to make a little noise, stir a little shit this weekend. Are you interested in whether I'm going to do that?
Are you going?
I don't know. Maybe.
Why don't you go to Valderrama instead?
I haven't really given it much thought. It's, you know, it's so much easier to watch on TV. I've had a long week. It's, you know, there's a lot going on. We'll see. We'll see how it goes. All right, so that's it. John Rahm, he's your winner, 2023 U.S. Open. We've said everything. You've gotten the definitive word on the LLG-NLU merger. Talks with 4Play are still ongoing. It looks like EAL is out. He will not be involved in the new company. But that's all there is.
No, it's good. I think we're still finding our stride, trying to figure this out.
No apologies here. Listen, this is the new world golf order. We're doing what we do, when we do it, and the way we want to. And that's kind of it.
I love that. We have no apologies. Beautiful.
All right, fellas, good seeing you again. Remember to stick around for a few seconds after I press this button so that we can publish this for the good people of the world.
Of course. Appreciate go Pooge.
See ya.
One, two, three, four.